The usefulness of sandpaper is precisely that it is abrasive. It's made to rub something slowly, methodically, constantly, until that something is raw. In the same way, a sandpaper person is the individual we can't avoid, a relative, coworker, neighbor, whose presence annoys us, rubs us raw little by little, day after day. I suspect each of us could name at least one person who, for whatever reason, bothers us. It's only fair to acknowledge that we ourselves are bound to irritate someone else. As much as I try to be non-abrasive, I have no doubt that I myself must be some people's sandpaper person, probably even someone in this very room. Coming to terms with that reminds me to be kind, even as I might occasionally find someone annoying. Here's an example. When I was a medical assistant at a feminist family planning clinic, I had a coworker, how can I put this? She had very low boundaries. She was always sticking her nose into other people's business, inciting the kind of gossip that spirals into drama, never implicating herself, of course. Once, and this is while she was on the clock, mind you, she used one of our clinic phone lines to call the number on her box of hair dye, and she asked whoever was unfortunate enough to answer that call whether the color she had selected was going to help her to attract a man. That's annoying, right? Here's the thing, though. When we got behind and I needed to leave for a college class, or a coworker had kids that needed to be picked up promptly at daycare, this same coworker never minded staying late. She wasn't bad. Sandpaper people, in my mind, they aren't evil or even abusive. They simply grate on our nerves. This kind of person is part of life, and so what should we do when we encounter one? It's tempting to write them off as some kind of mysterious cosmic punishment that must be endured. After all, we can't very well run screaming whenever a particular coworker pulls into the parking lot or that certain relative starts sending those texts. So we should probably figure out how to learn to live with them. The townsfolk in Abiyoyo learned their own version of this, didn't they? They may have been fed up with the boy and his father at first, but those annoying habits of playing the ukulele and performing magic tricks turned out to have a pretty important upside. What I would like to explore today is whether or not our sandpaper people might actually be opportunities for spiritual growth. Annoying as certain individuals may be, as much as they rile and rough us up, maybe they smooth us out as well. That's also the purpose of sandpaper. Can we learn something from them, even if we never grow to love or even like them? My sandpaper coworker did teach me something. She cornered me one day in the awkward block of counter space where I worked, and she showed me that if I wrapped and then arranged the medical instruments in a particular way, I could fit more of them in the autoclave. If I could sterilize more equipment at once, then I could run the machine less often, and that saved me substantial minutes, a handful of times each day. So is a tip this practical, a spiritual lesson? I would argue yes. Yet the undoubtedly spiritual lesson I learned from her is simply that I can learn from people I don't like. In this case, the situation was pretty clear-cut. She appeared in my realm bearing helpful information. Fewer autoclave batches equaled a less stressful job. Unfortunately, the way this works isn't always so obvious. How do we move from being irritated to gaining spiritual insight? This is one of those questions to which there are no wrong or right answers and many worthy paths. If you found any particularly good ones, then I'm sure I'm not the only one who would love to hear about them during congregational response. One resource I find incredibly helpful is the work of Pema Chodron, today's most popular American-born teacher of Buddhism. I hear she also made an appearance in the services last weekend, and I wasn't able to be here last weekend, but you should know that she's authored many clear, simple books that might interest you if you find yourself wanting to go deeper with this stuff than the few morsels I can offer here. From Chodron, I learned about the Tibetan concept of Shenpa, which she describes as the hook that triggers our habitual tendency to close down and feel spiteful, annoyed, etc. She says that getting unhooked begins by recognizing that moment of unease, so we can learn to relax in that moment. Shenpa is usually involuntary, and it gets right to the root of why we suffer. Someone looks at us in a certain way, or we hear a certain song. We smell a certain smell. We walk into a certain room and boom, we're hooked. We're crawling out of our skin with disgust or irritation or that feeling of superiority. I have to admit that I recognize this. It sometimes describes me. Chodron has also experienced what happens when people practice recognizing Shenpa. In fact, this is a formal exercise at Gampo Abbey, the Buddhist monastery in Nova Scotia, where she is the principal teacher. She reports, "We discovered that some of us could feel Shenpa, even when a particular person simply sat down next to us at the dining table." Her take on what's happening is that Shenpa thrives on the underlying insecurity of living in a world that is always changing. We could also call Shenpa the urge to smoke that cigarette, to have another drink, to indulge our addiction, whatever it is. Those with strong addictions know that working with habitual patterns begins with the willingness to fully acknowledge our urge, and then the willingness not to act on it. She writes, "If we can see Shenpa just as we're starting to close down, when we feel the tightening, there's the possibility of catching the urge to do the habitual thing and not doing it." Well, that's hopeful. And there's more. To support and contain this process, Chodron strongly recommends a meditation practice. There are other steps she suggests as well. Does someone bother you? Stay with the uneasiness. Maybe this is counterintuitive, but don't run away. Stay with the tightening, the itch of Shenpa. Train in sitting still with the desire to scratch. This is how we learn to stop the chain reaction of habitual patterns that otherwise will rule our lives. If we are willing to practice this over time, prajna begins to kick in. Prajna means clear seeing. It's our innate intelligence, our wisdom. By focusing on prajna, we begin to see the whole chain reaction clearly, the big picture. As we practice, this wisdom becomes a stronger force than Shenpa. That, in and of itself, has the power to stop the chain reaction of being driven to distraction by our sandpaper people. We might not like them, and that's okay. We don't have to like everyone, but they will no longer provoke in us such vehemence. The earlier we catch it, teaches children, the easier Shenpa is to work with. But even catching it when we're already all worked up is good. Sometimes we have to go through the whole cycle, even though we see what we're doing. The urge is so strong, the hook so sharp, the habitual pattern so sticky, that there are times we can't do anything about it. But there is still always something we can do after the fact, she reassures us. We can rerun the story. Maybe we start with remembering that all worked up feeling and get in touch with that. We look clearly at the Shenpa in retrospect. This is very helpful. It's also helpful to see Shenpa arising in little ways where the hook is not quite so sharp. For example, maybe the person who hooks you is a close relative and it's an old, deep, powerful cycle. You're caught in it. That's a lot to tackle. So maybe a realistic goal is to simply notice the times that you realize in retrospect that you got stuck in that loop. The development of that prajna, remember that's clear seeing, might prepare you to one day reflect that the reason your neighbor annoys you might actually be because of their resemblance in habit or characteristic to the relative with whom you struggle. Well, that's interesting. Start there. See what else you can learn. Build up to tackling that more ingrained relationship. I find that the simple act of noticing my thoughts can be tremendously liberating when someone is getting on my last nerve. Staying with whatever hard feeling is present is difficult. I didn't grow up knowing how to do this, but learning it is the key to freedom from suddenly finding myself seething with silent irritation, not sure how I got there or how to return from that brink. Another way to put this is that I've learned from children that just acknowledging what I'm feeling without judgment can, on my good days at least, help me be open, even curious toward my sandpaper people. After all, everybody has a heartache, an important reminder from our reading today by Joy Harjo, the renowned Creek Nation poet. Everybody has a heartache. Everybody has a story. My friend Cassie had a powerful experience of just what I'm talking about, and she gave me permission to share it with you here. Growing up, her family befriended a difficult woman who was incorporated into most holiday celebrations and other family events, but she was not particularly easy to have around. At Thanksgiving, it often seemed like she would come just to criticize and suck the energy out of the room. Years have passed, and Cassie now lives states away. When she was 7 months pregnant, this is just about a month and a half ago, this family friend announced her intention to visit. It wasn't exactly welcome news, it just wasn't great timing, but Cassie felt that she couldn't refuse, and so 5 days after Cassie gave birth, this friend arrived. Are you kidding? I said over the phone when she told me the story. How'd it go? Cassie sighed. It was okay, she said. Pause. It wasn't great. When this friend didn't get what she wanted, her bad mood would drift everywhere. Cassie described it as a bad mist. This friend expected a lot of one-on-one time with her and sightseeing tours, and she was insulted that her host was preoccupied with nursing and sleep and the big transition of having a human come out of her body and into her life. Yet as the days of the visit wore by, Cassie saw that this person was suffering spiritually. She was lonely. Life had not gone as she wanted. She didn't have healthy ways to address her loneliness. All of the stories she shared about her life betrayed that manipulation was her only mode of being in relationship with those she desperately sought comfort from and connection to. Cassie began to see that everybody has a heartache. I think she's more spiritually mature than I am because she actually ended up being grateful that she had more than a single holiday meal mediated by other people to spend with this family friend. It forced her to be more present with the discomfort of this person's company. And that ultimately proved the key to her noticing what was happening on a deeper level. That's precisely what Chodron teaches. Instead of judging her friend, instead of finding her lacking and discarding her as a simple annoyance, Cassie started to see the complexity of this person, in all her shortcomings, yes. Yet she also glimpsed the tremendous disappointments that life had contained for this person. And in seeing that, she found a place of compassion. Cassie was surprised to realize that her spiritual lesson was humility. She herself is a happy newlywed. She and her husband have a healthy baby. He's like the cutest baby you've ever seen. They have meaningful work and a community of connection. In a flash, she realized that while she had done many things right, for which she was rightly proud, she is also profoundly lucky to not wake up with the emptiness she saw in her friend's life. "That could very easily be me," she said on the phone. In his reflection, our worship leader, Dan, talks about locating the point of friction because it's where the learning can happen. He observed something else to me about friction during a meeting that we had to prepare this service. In order to create the friction generated by applying sandpaper to something, two surfaces are required. One alone would have no use. There would literally be no friction, no resistance. And metaphorically, there could be no learning. The friction is where Cassie learned. It's where we encounter shenpa, our hooks or urges, and also, hopefully, eventually, the clear sight of prajna. The friction is where I learned from a difficult coworker. The sandpaper people in our lives may rub us raw, sure. But if we can greet the friction as a teacher, then they might also help rub us smooth. May it always be so. Amen.